order.
Mr. Mark?
Let's pray. Our most kind, gracious Heavenly Father, Lord, we ask you to look over us today as we go through this workshop, that everything we do be in accordance with your will. We say this humbly in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Not used to this.
All right, Mr. Matt, it's all yours.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for having me down. I know I have an extra meeting. I'm not sure if this is on the agenda. I really appreciate you guys having a discussion about what's going on here. So back at the end of 2023, obviously, the storm come through and did a significant amount of damage in several rural Florida counties. And in a special legislative session at the end of 2023, these money was specified directly for some of the rural communities. It's kind of over into the SHIP program. We are the county SHIP administrator, and the county has received $3.4 million to be able to use for hurricane repairs and replacements. So for us to get moving on this, well, originally we asked the county to increase on our Workforce Housing Assistance Plan, which kind of oversees the rules, to increase the value of $25,000 for repairs, and we use normal SHIP money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the state of Florida ended up pumping $3 million more into it, which has now kind of put us where we can do housing replacement. And before we kind of got in too deep into this, you guys need to approve a resolution that we'll prepare on your behalf. I kind of wanted to have an idea what you guys were thinking and kind of do it in a workshop format as compared to an open, you know, where somebody's got to vote on it. So kind of give us your ideas now. We'll prepare the resolution as best we can to meet your qualifications and then kind of go from there. So I want to kind of hit a couple of high points of what we're considering and what we've done. We've not come up with this on our own. We're kind of following the playbook that was used when Hurricane Michael come up through the Panhandle and some rural communities that were hit out there. So we're kind of following what they did. And so just real brief, just kind of hit on this a little bit. Applicants must be SHIP eligible. They have to meet the income requirements.
I'm sorry, I think if... just so they can follow along.
Okay.
If you're going to hit on the things that you guys emailed over to us, I'll provide them.
Okay. Well, you guys have that in front of you. I won't even go through the whole check.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
They should be looking at what you're reading. Today.
Okay. So we're looking at got to be income eligible. So therefore, they have, and I have. A breakdown of what makes people SHIP income eligible.
That's just what I was thinking.
There you go. So the way this chart works is the more people in your household.
I think we need one more right here. We just come in.
There you go. How you doing, sir? The more people in your household.
Anybody else want to read? There's another paper right here. Look at this. It's Mr. Matt. The SHIP program. He was working on one.
So the more people in the household, if you go across the top column, you can see
$3 million.
The more people that's in the household, the more income. Just to kind of start over, the county got $3.4 million for hurricane repairs and replacement of damaged or destroyed homes.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're trying to do is kind of come up with a plan that you guys can tell me how you would like to administer the program, so we can get a resolution to you guys to modify your SHIP local housing assistance plan. And so we kind of need some direction from the county of how you would like for us to administer the funds. And let me just say this up front. We're currently a SHIP administrator. If the county wants to go, hey, we want somebody else to administer this fund, then
Mr. Matt, I'm gonna say this. You do a good job.
Yeah.
And I try to be at all your meetings, and I know I've missed some here lately, but you do a very good job.
I appreciate that.
Sounds like you ain't going to get rid of us.
No, we're going to be with it. Just for the record, we're pretty good at what we do. This housing replacement's a whole different game. We've never done this in the SHIP program before. So what I've done is we're in sort of a tentative contract agreement with the CDBG administrator. Won't have anything to do with the county, they'll administer under us. So it's going to Economic Council, will contract with the CDBG administrator, will prove they're eligible, and then we'll kind of make the determining factor as to what type of housing we think they need. And then the CDBG administrator who does this is what the approach to do. They'll go out and do the bids. The county wants to do a mobile home replacement. They'll go to the mobile home lots, they'll design the bid specifications, and then we'll pay them out of the funds we receive. So it won't be a contract between you guys and the CDBG administrator and our agency. We just don't have any professional
Mr. Matt, now, are you talking about building a house or mobile homes? Okay, okay.
As of today, our plan is to do a mobile home replacement.
Okay.
What about roofs and stuff like that?
Yeah. Any roofs, we can do that.
Yes, sir. A lot of people didn't have insurance when they got disgusted with FEMA. Our people need help.
Yeah, well, that's what this money is for. So we just need to get a plan together. They can apply, but what we're looking for is sort of a sweet spot where they have to be income eligible, don't have insurance, and then they can have insurance, but the insurance doesn't cover their cost. Or if they receive FEMA dollars, they can cover their cost. We're going to kind of meet that need in the middle. So a lot of people may
have... I drove around one time. I thought it was on that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Are we looking at using basically the same point system that we use currently with this?
On the repair side of it.
Because when we built houses back, I think we stopped housing in 2009, somewhere right through there. We didn't have the point system, and honestly, I like the point system personally a lot better.
Yeah. We can certainly incorporate. My initial thought is I don't know how many people we're going to have that's going to qualify for this.
And that was my next question.
Yeah, we don't know. The estimates we got, and I think we sent this to you guys, is there's 138 houses that had more than 20,000 worth of damage.
Right.
Now, out of those 138 houses, and we didn't do this was just information that came to us.
Right.
I don't know how many of those people are SHIP eligible, number one. I don't know how those who are SHIP eligible had insurance. And or FEMA, we don't have FEMA. Will not share any information with us as far as who received FEMA.
Right.
So we're trying to find that group of people that either doesn't have enough FEMA or insurance money to get their home fixed and kind of meet that need financially.
But also, if they don't meet the need, the down payment assistance will still be eligible for this program or not.
I don't understand your question.
The down payment, if they don't meet the criteria for a home,
yeah.
Is there a different criteria for a down payment assistance? Or is it all the same across the board?
If their home was destroyed in the storm, and for some reason they're not eligible for the disaster money,
mm-hmm.
they certainly can qualify under the SHIP normal down payment assistance.
That was my question.
Yeah,
yes.
They certainly can qualify for that.
I have a question. But of this $3.4 million, it can't be used for the down payment, right?
This $3.4 million has got to be attached to disaster.
Okay.
Right. The $300 is on top of the $3.4
million. Correct.
So
actually,
we got
the same account, but we have to keep it separate.
So we got $3.7 for this year.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Assuming we hadn't spent some of the $300, at how much of that's remaining.
What about the people that's lost homes, their primary resident, not second homes, that's lost it on our coast, like Horseshoe, Gina, Swanee? If they get the mobile homes, they're going to have to, will they assist them raising them up too? Because they cannot be on the ground.
We've asked that question, and we can put the home right back where it's at as long as everything we're doing is meeting current code. So whatever the county's building code is, they have been involved with water management or whoever does those kind of decisions. The SHIP program does not have any rule against it. I don't know if the county wants to invest there, but there's certainly no rule that says we can't.
If they put the application out there and they do all the paperwork, how long does it take for y'all to act to get them in a home?
That's a fine question. I do not have the answer for that. I can tell you that my current roof on my house needs to be replaced due to storm damage. I got a brother. Is anything being recorded around here? My brother works for a construction company. It still ain't being fixed. So I'm just telling you that the contractors that we're talking to, they got a lot of work to be done. And unfortunately, you got cash jobs and you got bid jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But cash jobs pay more than the bid jobs do. So I don't, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just using normal capitalism. People are going to make more money first and they'll come back. So
mm-hmm.
I got a sneaky suspicion that our jobs are going to kind of go down a little bit more on their priority list.
Yeah.
I don't mean that disrespectful.
It's just
the way the reality works. If someone needs a roof pretty bad and they got cash money, they'll pay more than what we're going to
mm-hmm.
do that.
Today, what do you mainly want us to? What kind of model?
I need an answer on mobile homes. And our plan is to, again, because as of today, if they're currently homeless because their home was destroyed, they don't have health. I mean, they don't have a home insurance, and they ain't got FEMA money. They're limited options.
Yeah, they don't have money.
Our agency needs to limit the amount of choices. And I don't mean this disrespectful to people. We need to limit the amount of choices that we're offering up to residents who are damaged in this. So our plan would be, based on their household size, is to come up with a home that meets their needs. So mm-hmm. in other words, if they're just, for example, an elderly person by themselves, we would be a single wide, just a basic model. There's a family of four or five people, and they got kids in the house, we try to find a three-bedroom, four-bedroom, double-wide, put in this place.
Mm-hmm.
We want to set a cap of $250,000 for the maximum we can spend per house, which would also include raising it up. So if someone wants to put their house on stilts, and that's going to cost, I think we looked at $70,000 or
just
whatever it is,
yeah.
That comes off the cost. So they may not get the house that they're seeking, and yet put that $250,000 cap on there is kind of the option. Those are decisions you guys, I'm here to ask.
We want the $250,000. Mobile homes.
Those are sort of the bones of what we're trying to put together here.
I'd help a lot of people in our community.
Them prices are starting to come down a little bit on them mobile homes too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
my next question on the raising. You have different ways of doing that. You can either fly that single wide in and set it down on the foundation columns, or they can lift it up. Is there a process to determine which way that'll go?
I don't think honestly
and do we need to, you're the building man, do we need to, what, not well, I mean, at the end of the day, this mess is going to run through your office too, so what's the best way is funnel either way.
There's
no requirement for the ship.
Which one?
How that thing gets up on stilts, we just need to put it up on there and meet the code. So
which one is the cheapest of getting it raised up to code?
I think that'd be the answer. So,
is there a timeline on using these funds?
Yeah, we have to have it obligated by June 30th, 2025, and then spent by the following June 30th.
Go ahead,
so
man.
We got roughly
the foundation work to bid it out, like open.
Yeah.
I
think you should.
Because
each
area could be different. They're not all going to be same heights. They're not all going to be, you know, even in Horseshoe, there's different areas that are different heights.
Seeing as how you said it really does both ways, would that bid process be the best way to answer that question?
You almost need to get a flood elevation height from us first
right. On
that site specific.
This is where the CDBG administration would come in.
Right.
We're not experts on that.
I'm not claiming
to be. We would pay them to go through whatever requirements you need. And all that goes to the bid package.
Well, my thing with them also is because Leon's worked so hard to bring our FEMA numbers back in line.
Well, what I want to see is them get eligible for 10 feet in elevation when they come to us, and they need to be 14.
So that's
go back to a different.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying let the CDBG people run that through his office.
Before we do a bid process, you have
yeah.
a plan. There's this plan that's
yes.
coming up with.
Yes.
Right. I'm just worried about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we all need to be.
Dixon County is a unique county. It really is. So close to the coast. It's unique, so we definitely need full. From all
that would be an ask, I think, from the board is to make sure that they run the permitting process through Leon's office.
Yeah, at least get the flood requirements up.
Would there any ever be a reason why someone doing some type of new construction would not have to get someone from you ahead of time?
They would come through, but on that particular thing, they need to know up front ahead of time.
Before they bid on it.
Requirements are going
to
be.
So if it's on the coastline, I need to get with you for
before we put it out for bid. Yeah, because see, there's two different flood levels on that coastline. There's a VE and AE, and if it's in a VE, then they have to get another engineer involved on that process.
Yes. Okay.
So they, almost in their application packet to you, they need to have the flood requirements from us.
If they just had a certified elevation, wouldn't that?
Not, because if it's in a VE, then they have to have the engineer's scale certificate.
So we'll just give them what you need.
Elevation height for this, and you're going to need that. And then they'll know that, hey, whatever it's going to be, if we're going to be a double wide or a single wide, they'll know they have to need height.
Which would make a big difference on the foundation of setting the cost of it, right?
Then you have another factor that will come into play with the benchmarks. Like, we can get you a preliminary elevation height of the property based on LIDAR, but they still have to have a benchmark and survey and elevation certificates. Like, there's a whole bunch that's going to play into this other than just the cost of the home.
Right. So that would
the initial process, you actually need to be an administrator. I can tell that it's not loud. Somewhere around $15,000 a house. To pay out, get off.
No, that's the formal fitness process.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredibly expensive thing. When I got that number, I almost threw up. But I don't have a choice because there's nobody to go hire that does this kind of stuff. And we don't even have the demand we're going to have to go do it. So I can't add a payroll person that has an extra fee than that. So I have to hire somebody that can do it.
So that actually drops your actual money to
we're
235, right?
Well, what's your question again?
That actually drops your from 250 to 235 right off the bat per project or not?
No, 250 would be the max price.
Right.
The way the agreement's set up is 10% administration can be added to that.
Okay.
So that means we could charge $25,000 if the house is $250,000.
Right.
We got to pay out $15,000 to $18,000 to a CDBG administrator, and that's how. So the $250,000 be the max price, 10% above that.
Oh, above it. Okay. So it don't actually come off. Okay.
Good.
So that's how that would work. So the $3.4 million, if we max this out, in theory, up to $340,000 would be used to pay for the administrative cost to do this. That's kind of how this works. That's where it has to come off that. So 250 plus, so what we're saying in our plan will be 250 would be the max cost.
I follow you.
And this CDBG administrator, they worked in the coastal areas up there?
They did not. They just worked in rural Florida communities before.
Okay.
So we have working relationships with them. We just don't have anybody to go through the whole bid spec process.
Nobody in my staff's qualified. Oh, no, I understand that. Mr. Matt, can I ask a question?
Yes,
sir. CDBG, are you going to have any activity you have to jump through for any kind of
environmental
thing? Because you're on the coast building.
I don't think
you're
going to
ask them that question.
As long as it's not CDBG money being spent. This is not federal money being spent. It's state money.
Helping you to administer.
Oh, there's no CDBG dollars mixed, so no federal requirements. It's just state dollars.
It's not new development because these people have houses before, so you're not worried about wetland impact.
So the CDBG environmental requirements will not meet. I'm just using the term CDBG because I don't know who does the CDBG work, or professional services, whoever it is. We just have a working relationship with Fred Fox Enterprises, and they do the same stuff. So it's just we've worked with them in the past. I know their teams.
Okay.
So that was the first negotiation we went to. They seemed willing to help. Of course, they have less money.
We also have several citizens in our county that own second homes down there. After that won't help them.
There's got to be a primary residence. Can't be rental property. And I'm sorry.
Our original plan
is that we're not doing rental properties.
Okay.
We don't need to, a rental property was torn down, you got a homeless, possible low income family, But the owner of that rental property could be a wealthy landowner, and we don't think that's probably going to do business.
Just ask us.
So second home either.
Nope. That could be
rental or not.
That'd be their primary residence, homestead or property.
And two, if people had insurance, they ain't going to qualify. If they got FEMA money already, they ain't going to be qualified to take that right.
Because we don't know what they got. We don't.
They qualify for the difference.
Okay, I got you.
They have a roof replacement that's going to cost $34,000. FEMA gave them $16,000, and I've got some notes for them. If they got $16,000, we can kind of fill the gap on the difference to get to that roof replacement cost. Can I hit my area of concerns real quick? Y'all guys want to bounce these ideas off of you? So we work with lower income families on a consistent basis. That's kind of what we do. It's a long process from when the check shows up from FEMA until the repairs get done and no contractors do the work. And to be honest with you, a lot of these contractors aren't even taking phone calls from these types of families. I don't mean that disrespectful to contractors. There's just so many cash calls being done across North Florida. I am concerned that if a family in that example had a $30,000 roof replacement, they got $15,000 for FEMA, we show up offering $15,000 to fix the roof, the $15,000 they got via check from FEMA,
gone.
Long gone. So we're going to run into some heartburn when we tell people you've got to pay the portion you receive from FEMA, and that money is out the door. So those phone calls are going to come in,
yep.
And they're going to come to you guys as well. I just want everybody, unless there's somebody got a better plan to eliminate us duplicating services. But some of these families, they received this money sometime in October.
It's done gone.
And as we're moving on February, we're not even going to be touching these houses for several more months. There's a lot of financial needs that pop up for families, and I just don't know how we could turn around and say, hey, you got this much money from FEMA. Enjoyed your Christmas. Glad you did. And we're now, it's going to be so hard for all of us.
It's not fair.
So now those phone calls we predict will come. Another one that I think is going to be a phone call you guys are going to get is there are some homes in Dixie County that were kind of dilapidated, sort of. They're not in good shape. And just like I live in Lafayette County, it's the same where we're. If we can't prove that the storm destroyed that house, make it unlivable, we can't use these dollars. So somehow we got to kind of cross-reference our application list with some type of, I don't know, emergency management, whoever has a list of which your homes said were destroyed in the storm.
We made a bunch of ours, or we didn't make them. We strongly advised them to do demo permits, storm-related.
Yeah.
So that would help somewhat in that process there, wouldn't it?
We turned in a list of 75 just this past week to FEMA, and they have their own list of substantial damaged homes as well.
So somehow we've got to cross-reference.
Right.
What you got is some older housing that needed to be torn down, and then all of a sudden we start handing out, wrong story, we start helping families with new homes. One person gets it, their house was destroyed in the storm, one person just in a pretty run-down place. As those phone calls will start coming in.
I've had a couple of those on the septic side wanting to get FEMA money, and they got mad at me, but I'm not going to falsify documents. If it ain't storm-related, I'm sorry.
That's kind of how we feel about it too, sir, and I just want everybody to kind of be on the same page. I see that as one of three major issues, that the services for the people's already spent their money, dilapidated housing, and I do think that the duplication of services also come people like contractors, because people may want to help, they had money in their hands, but nobody did the work for them, and then over time they kind of like, well, nobody do this work, I'll just throw a tarp up here and deal with it when I can, and that money's spent. I just think that's going to be a problem across all the counties that we serve. So,
Leon, do you feel like working closely with Matt and the CGB people that he chooses
I
with.
I encourage him. I will any which way I can. We think we have to set aside some time to make sure there's a streamline. And to kind of circle back to what you were saying about it could be a lengthy time. Well, most of these applicants have lost their primary residence. A lot of them qualified to get in the temporary housing, and they'll be there for 18 months in that. So you have a little time right there.
But I would like to see this honestly closer than what we'd normally do in, on regular ship.
I think it needs to be.
Totally agree. We don't want any part of this as far as like making rules and regulations on the code by. We want 100% those guys on the front end of that. So we totally support that.
Do y'all see most of all of this money being used down in coastal areas?
It's countywide.
It's countywide, but
but
it goes back to what he was saying a while ago, Mr. Ward, about proving that it was storm-related.
Most of the houses that were demoed were on the coastline.
Yep. Yes, and that's...
And
that was storm-related.
And if they qualify, that's correct, and it has to be the primary...
Back to the secondary home deal. What about a guy that's docks got destroyed? He spent a month gathering it all up in the woods and bringing it back, and another storm comes in and it leaves again. All that lumber I piled up is gone again. I don't qualify. That's two times. That's five.
You got plenty of gas in the airboat.
When we do a new home replacement, we'll do a 20-year lien.
DPL is 20.
20 years. As long as we live in the house 20 years, no money is required to be paid back. We normally do a 10-year lien. We'll bump it up to 20. So each year they live in the home, 5% comes off how much they have to pay back if they sell the property. We're not 100% clear where that money goes if it sells because of money. The assumption right now, if somebody was to sell that house, it would come back to the normal SHIP program for that upcoming year, just like a normal payoff would. But that's not been confirmed. So if you have a couple $200,000 houses, people sell after the first year, we may end up with some substantial amount of SHIP money in our normal SHIP funds if we can take those repayment funds and put them back in normal SHIP dollars.
So you're not positive on that?
I'm not 100% positive. My assumption is those are Dixie County funds. If somebody sells, they stay in Dixie County. To my knowledge, there'll be no reason to repay it.
Is the 20-year DPL, is that a requirement from state, or is that just something?
That's something we have done in such a large amount of money. We want to encourage people not to get a free home and sell it.
Put it on the market.
We want to encourage them to stay in that home because they're going from uninsured. They got no skin in the game.
Well,
they all set up a free $200,000.
Well, with that, is there a requirement to support insurance on that?
There is a requirement. There's no way, however, we're going to be able to police it. We're going to force them to prove to us they're insured. But if somebody cancels their insurance, I mean, unless we start going after them to foreclose on them, I don't think nobody wants to do that. There's no way to enforce it.
Right.
We're taking applications right now. So anybody wants to apply, they can. I do think after your question earlier, I do think need to put some priority list on
that. The same contact information you and Ms. Stephanie.
Everything's the same. Everything will be identical if you fit in a flow chart. Applicants, we're going to prove they're eligible. Everything's the same. If they're a repair, they'll stay with us. We'll do a work right up, prove whatever needs to be done, stays with us. If it's a new home, we're going to hire somebody to come do the bid process and work with the building officials on getting a new home installed.
Won't be between
you guys, between us and whatever group we contract with to work on our behalf to do that. So you guys, you'll have one contract if you choose just for us to administer this to be with us. And we're just trying to find some assistance to kind of help these homes get up, make sure we don't have any log jams. So.
Just so it's in our minutes, what's the phone number and extension?
3662-4115.
Who's on? She's on
the
trip program.
I think she did that on purpose.
She might be a
long-term one. And Matt, I do have one question. I apologize. You may have answered this before I was able to get here.
Did you get that number? Okay.
This $3 million that you're talking about now on this letter, that's strictly for new homes, right? That's not dealing with the repairs?
No.
Okay.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be just new homes. You are doing roofing or whatever damage.
But the same deal has to apply.
Right, they have to meet the eligibility.
They're eligible. We're going to ask them about a homeowner's insurance, and they're going to ask about FEMA dollars. And
they have to prove that it happened.
Now, when you said
if they have a home that didn't get hurt by the storm, they still can apply for normal SHIP funding. We might can help them through that. That money stays the same. It's not like we've lost that money. But if we're going to spend part of the $3.4 million, we've got to have some type of pretty good idea of the damage in the storm.
Okay.
Which is where the
how much of the regular money do we have available?
We get $350 a year. I don't know the number that's remaining right now. But I'm guessing somewhere around $300,000, $250. That's what I'm guessing right now.
Is any of that already allocated from past?
Yeah.
We just done some last week.
The handouts and the eligibility that you did, what's the difference in the two columns?
This is your point system.
Which numbers? Is one for a family of 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a family of 4, they can make up to $77,000.
Right.
For a family of 1, they can make $54,000.
What did the ELI and the DIA come on?
That's how we have to cover it now.
So what's the bottom section down here?
That's how much the state of Florida says they can afford for a house.
For payment.
That's just basically the state of Florida. We look at an average of 30%, and that's how they don't want. It's just a form we use when we do down payment assistance.
How much the state of Florida feels like over the maximum house payment they can play and pay if it is like that number.
I need to talk about the ELI, low and moderate. So we're required to classify these people
based on
what category they're in.
We have rules on that, but we're required to spend at least 30% of the money
on families who are in the very low or extreme of the ELI stands for extremely low income. So 30% of the money's got to be spent on ELI or VLI, so very low or extremely low. An additional 30% has to be spent on the low income or some combination of the both. So when we start getting applications in, if we get a whole bunch of moderate income families, we may have to slow some of those down until we meet the requirements of very low and extremely low. That's written in statute. We have to spend at least 60% of the money in that low income,
mm-hmm.
very low, or 30% in the very low or extremely low,
okay.
An additional 30% in the low, and then the difference between spend and moderate. We can't modify that because it's in statute. So we have to track that when these applications start coming in as far as how much. So if we end up, for example, with 5 moderate families at $250,000 each, that's $1.25 million that's spent up into the moderate income category. Well, whatever 30% number is, we have to shut it off at that point. So until we kind of get caught up on some low and some very low income, kind of meeting those numbers.
We do have a waiver, we think. We've been told we're going to have a waiver right now for our normal SHIP assistance.
20% of the money has to spend on special needs families. Special needs is a wide definition of how the state does special needs. We do not think special needs is going to come into play right here. We've been told verbally we will not have to meet the special needs requirement. A lot of information. I'm sorry for burying you guys with this.
Do you feel like our limits and all right now with our SHIP program, are they okay, or do they need to
expand? I think the modifications we've made in the last year or two, I think we're okay right now. Just kind of get an idea of really what needs to happen.
The interest rates need to drop. We get interest rates dropping, we get
these types of families buying a house, getting them affordable. So if you take an interest rate of 3.5%, 4%, a family can afford $150,000 house, bump up 7.5%, 8%. The house price stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, we need the inflationary stuff to kind of come into play on the federal level.
Yeah, hurry up and make that happen.
I wish I had any control over that. I have none.
This time, true. That's right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the income here, that would include any wages or Western, Social Security, everything, correct?
That's correct. That's correct. The state of Florida requires on a normal chip transaction that we're, like, for example, required to get 6 months worth of bank statements. We've got waivers we can get less information due to being a storm deal, so we're going to ask for like 1 month's information because a lot of families that are homeless are destroyed. They don't have access to all that documentation, but they can go back and get the last month, even if they change banks for 1 month. So we'll require a little bit less information. We are going to require proof of ownership. And so that's going to sometimes be a challenge if you start getting to some, there's no other way to say it, to some family members who own that house, and yet there's no legal documentation to own that house. In other words, it was my grandmother's. I'm living in it. However, probate,
you're not the owner
of that house. There's about 14 different grandchildren that own the house equally. So we're trying to wade through how we're going to prove ownership without a clear deed to the property.
That's going to be an issue, I know, for a fact.
Yeah.
I know one.
That's across the
that's
across a whole bunch of families.
Yeah, but I know one for sure that's going to be an issue.
So somehow we've got to figure out a way to prove. And we think if their name, for example, is on the taxes, like for us tax collector's office, we
for
think
X amount of years.
So that's where we're going. We're trying to find
so
some
So their name won't be on there?
That's going to be a problem if you do.
Yeah
their name won't.
We've got one, and y'all remember I brought this to y'all a while back. It's an old ship loan. And when I say old, it's already lived its lifetime, okay?
All right.
So it belonged to one sister. Another sister signed a deed over to herself, had it notarized by someone, and it's all been investigated through FDLE. And the notary signed it, sister that signed it over to herself, did sign it over to herself, but she signed her sister's name. So we loaned ship money, and when I say we, the county, to this sister to rebuild his home. Now the sister that owns the home is alive, but everybody else is dead. But we got an issue in court that I'm trying to get cleared up, which is not clear at all, but that's the way this happened. As far as it's gonna have to be a title search just about to prove ownership, and of course I know that's not what most people want to hear. But they're not terribly expensive; they're under $200, or you know, depending on when you're getting them and who you're getting them from, but around $200 a piece. But it's a mess, and if we're setting ourselves up just like this for litigation as far as the county, because really and truly, there's fraud committed on behalf of, you know, the sister against the county, against the SHIP program.
And that everything I'm talking to you about here is made up with the possible effects of fraud. There's no denying the fact, and I will not stand in front of you and tell you we're going to be perfect in what we do.
Right.
There's no possible way I can go to everybody's house and figure out who all is doing what. It's going to be a challenge, and phone will ring, and it's going to be an uncomfortable conversation that we're going to have with some people. But we are going to look at trying to figure out ways to prove people live there compared to prove they don't live there, they don't own it. So there's two ways to look at a piece of property.
We want to find a way to prove them eligible, or
find a way to prove them ineligible. So if somebody's homeless, I'd like to find a way to sue them.
Right.
Another
question I've got, Matt, is I know that through the program that you administrate for us, let's just say Jamie, y'all put a roof on his house. We're hypothetically, for the record speaking, because they did not, I ain't even going to use Jamie. So let's just say Joe Blow here. We put a roof on this house, and he's still within his DPL time. Mm-hmm. Is he eligible because his house got destroyed?
He would be.
With no payback as it depreciates out?
Right.
We do forgive that one.
We won't forgive it. It'll still be on the official
record. It'll still be on the official record.
So
even though the place don't even exist no more.
So instead of having a lien for, let's say there's $5,000 left on it, we go put a second lien for $200,000, and now he's $205,000.
Okay.
We're not going to go in there and dissolve or do a...
But we're not going to hold that against him neither, correct?
No. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's no requirements. If their home was destroyed, they're ineligible.
Okay.
Yeah. Or if their home was not destroyed and they're eligible, they had a new roof, and we gave them a new roof 7 years ago, whatever it is, and the storm, we can prove the storm took their roof off, they're eligible again. That's what
okay.
There's no...
Because I know there's some guidelines there also.
All the in some counties and some, you know, it's like a one time deal. This is a different game.
I thought it was, but I just wanted to be clear on that. That's all I got.
So just for my clarification, board and Mr. Matt, obviously we are in a workshop and we can't take any official action tonight, but we did provide you guys with what their recommendations would be for the eligibility and how they would administer it. So if it's okay with you guys, we'll just, as I've talked to Mr. Matt briefly before this meeting, you know, and he understands that we can't take any action. So what we would ask him to do if this board is agreeable is for them to go ahead and prepare the resolution based on the requirements that were presented to you, and if we can get that done in time, we would bring that back at the February 1st board meeting if it's prepared. If not, we have another meeting on the 15th. So that would be something that the board would be interested in doing if y'all don't have any objections to what is here presented.
The only thing I see is number 5 right there. I would like to somehow or another incorporate in wording Leon's office.
Is that to make, be included in
do you see what I'm saying, Leon, on number 5? I mean, I would like to for that to be in writing also, that the Dixie County Building and Zoning is part of the, because there is multiple different.
And they would have to meet the current building code.
But it don't say that.
But that can be put in there, correct?
Yeah.
Well, what would be easier to do is, the local health assistance plan does not get engaged with stuff like that, but the county just wants to send me over an agreement, I'll sign it, and then we all have a written agreement that before, that's in other words,
do they need to ask to the state approve local health assistance plan?
And that's really a agreement between us and the Board of County Commissioners.
Right.
So mm-hmm. Somebody just wants to prepare, hey, Matt, you know, we need any plans, we need to make sure Mr.
Number 8.
Mr. Wright has that.
Put a line item under number 8, and because we've got 7.
That he wants the MOU between SHIP and the county that will coordinate, that SHIP will coordinate with Leon.
The whole point. Correct. And that's what I'm okay with that. There's no spot in the local health assistance plan to add that in. And then what ends up happening, once they have that local health assistance plan, the state of Florida will monitor that. But then all of a sudden, anything we send him, they're going to say, hey, when did you send it to him? The local health assistance plan needs to be kind of clean. On our, with the county's agreement with the state of Florida, this information is between our agency and the Board of County Commissioners. But I think it's a separate document, just a simple MOU design.
You, I agree.
So that they'll coordinate any building?
Any new construction or new mobile home installation?
Replacement or anything like that. That's the only thing I've seen. I don't have an issue with nothing else. I like it. Wish we'd already doing it.
It's going to help our citizens a lot.
When can we actually put this out on the street?
As soon as we approve that resolution, at that point, we'll send it up to Tallahassee for our finance corporation. My assumption is that it'll be an immediate approval. That happens, we'll contact them and go, hey, everything's been approved. At that point, we'll start getting some PR stuff done.
Perfect.
So however you guys have a website, I'm going to be looking at the technical one anymore, how you want to do this or apply.
Okay.
Now, Matt, I do have one more question. The MOE, are you going to sign off on behalf of the program?
I'm going to call Matt.
Okay. That's what I want to make sure of, and then, of course, the chair.
The county's program, you guys just hire me. So what you're basically saying is MOU, and I agree to meet the county stipulation to make sure.
Okay. That's what I want to make sure, though, is that it's you and not Stephanie that I want to sign. Okay, that's what I...
Unfortunately, it's mine.
Uh-oh.
Matt, and one thing that I do want to add is if you see something before all this, please.
Yeah.
Reach out. Hey, I forgot.
I hope the board is patient and understand this is a long journey. And once we start saying, hey, free houses, new houses are coming, I cannot guarantee any time period of when this is going to have to prepare and or new mobile homes showing up on somebody's property.
Closing it. They could
still apply.
But
the priority list is only going to come into effect for those first. And after that, if we have additional money,
right,
we're going to go up to the top of the list if we have additional money. So I just want to make sure that unless someone has a better way to do a priority list other than putting a window on it. I don't know.
No, we got to have a window. So agree with that?
Yes, sir.
So if we can somehow, my suggestion would be February 1st or February 15th.
Sure.
And that, and if I'm, like, for example, we could do March 1st to March 31st as an application window, and then we start prioritizing the 1st of April. So that gives everybody the whole month of March to apply, unless someone has a better.
I think that's great. 31 days in March anyway, so.
And then all of a sudden, April 1st, we start prioritizing, we start contracting, contact people, verifying they're eligible for the program, and start doing house visits. Maybe like that's kind of maybe a time frame that would work for us, but I don't want to slow you guys down or speed you up faster than what you think we can do it, but a priority list needs a window of time for me for it to work properly.
With it not closing, I mean, it's still...
Correct.
I mean...
Yeah, but if you have a family that, in theory, if we were a lot of money, which I don't know how we're going to spend this much money. I don't know how many... I mean, you're talking about a small niche of people that didn't have house insurance. You know what I mean? That meet the income requirements. But if we were a lot of money... Somebody comes along late and they're like, hey, I got a family of four and my grandma lives with me and she's elderly. How come we don't qualify? Because someone else did, but the window for a priority list is only good for 30 days with the board's consent.
Yep, I think that's plenty of time.
And Matt, am I understanding this right that the new homes, no, replacement, my home is blown away. I can only get a trailer. You're not going to come in here and bill me back my $250,000 on stilt home down overlooking the point or something.
That's correct. That's
so I'm going to have a mobile home.
The board's okay with that.
I'm just asking.
No, I think I believe it's the quickest and easiest way to do it.
I mean, I'm good with that. I just wanted to make sure I was not misunderstanding it, you know, because if I want a site-built home, even if I can get it built cheaper than what you can buy me a trailer, we can't use the ship money for that. I've got to take basically the trailer. And I'm okay with that. I just want to make sure I understood, too. From
people that's going to call on the program, unfortunately, have no other option. They don't have health insurance, and you got FEMA dollars.
They're going to be glad to get it.
Oh, and I mean, a lot of them's going to, that's way better than what they probably, you know, we're not saying for sure what they had, but maybe better than what they had before. It's an instant fix, too.
I mean,
yes. When I say instant, as soon as you can get one off the lot, but it's usually quicker than a site bill.
The taxes.
You've got to coordinate all the contractors.
Okay, so I have a question for you.
That was a good question. Can I follow up with this one real quick? We're going to ask the question, how can you afford homeowners insurance and how can you afford taxes?
We have to have
proof they can afford to pay that. If not, we're going to have a problem. So somebody has, I'm talking about, they tell us they have zero income or hardly none, and we go put a house and they can't pay the taxes and insurance. I can't, in good conscience, put them in that house. I'm happy you brought that up. So that happens. I don't know how else to deal, but somehow they have to have enough income
to maintain it.
Not, we're just asking for problems.
That's going to be a problem.
The part of the country we're talking about, though, is, you know, the insurance is high, your property tax is high, because we're talking about one of the highest taxable part of our county.
Well, one of the things you're going to run into on the coastline is there's going to be no insurance available.
It's going to be hard.
Some
stuff. She lost her place down there. It's her primary residence.
That was one of the requirements they wanted to let us know up front. If we don't have to go back in and stick it into the place that it was at now, if that's where they want to put it at. We can't legally do that, but if they have another piece of property somewhere else, they want to put it on, they're trying to set it up there.
That'll work.
And do any of these money dollars would go towards another property?
Now, with that property, and that brings up a question for me, that property I have in Horseshoe that now I don't have a home on, and I went and bought a home in Old Town, I'm going to put my house in Old Town, I turn around and sell my property in Horseshoe, is that going to make me ineligible? Because
once we're done with it, they can sell some other asset they got somewhere else, that's from them.
Okay, so they're not actually looking at their overall financial picture as far as you're looking at income. Okay, good enough. I wish I had that question because I could see where that would be a you know, because property down there is doing pretty good for vacant lots.
This is going to be a long, challenging road ahead. There's going to be all kind of questions we ain't even thought of that's going to follow up.
That's why I would love to put that burden on you, right? That's why he made that statement when he first got up there. We could get somebody.
I don't want to live
with it, too.
I don't want to have somebody here that really wants to do this. I don't want this opportunity away from somebody else, you know. We enjoy the working relationship with Dixie County. We think we can get this done for you. I didn't, if I could, I wouldn't be here in front of you. It will be a challenge, and I hope... I've worked with everybody in this room that I know of, I'm easy to get a hold of. I'm as transparent, and I do my best to back up what I say, and we're going to do our best. I cannot guarantee this is going to be an easy process. I just can't tell you that.
It never is. It'll take one at a time.
That's all we can do. So I'll answer any questions you guys have.
Only thing I got is one question that's... may come across a long way, but it may not. But I'm just make sure you get them to sign, because I used to do a lot of work. And they're getting free stuff, as always. The cabinet was the wrong cabinet. The door was in the wrong place. The house wasn't the right color. And complaint. I mean, that's any way we get something signed, so we don't have to deal with that.
I think that prefab homes, the trailers, is going to help with that, too, because I'm not going to get to pick out what color cabinets I want. I'm going to get that trailer.
It's going to be this color wall.
We're going to try to simplify this as much as we can. I don't mean to disrespectful to these people. They deserve to live in the house of their dreams.
Yes.
We got to limit choices, and we got to say, hey, because
this is it.
The reality is, right now, if they had homeowners insurance, they would not be here with us. So they don't have a home, or their home is majorly damaged. There's no other way to fix it. We're I'm a taxpayer like you guys are, but somebody say, here's your opportunity, the idea that we need to say, well, how can we make this as pleasant? It's the home of your dreams. It's really not really, and I don't, please don't take that as
exactly
respectful to your people, but we need to limit options. I think that's an excellent point.
Yep.
Sorry, thank you. It's a good point. Please don't take it, what I'm saying there is disrespectful.
Oh, yeah, in a bad way. It hurts a lot of feelings you're doing something good, and then that's why I don't have Facebook. You can put something you think is great on there within 2 hours, you're the worst person in the world.
We got any other public? Go ahead.
I don't have a question. I've got a statement I want to make. I want to thank you, Matt. You helped my wife, Benita Nicolodi Ward, build a home, build our home back in 94 when our second child was born. I believe that's about the time of the child. Before that, we had nothing. A little single wide trailer on 10 acre piece of land. After we got that, like the whole world, we could access the money that was available through that. The bank worked with us, and it turned our lives around. And if that could happen to so many people.
That's exactly right.
If they deal with the SHIP program in its entirety, the way it's designed, and that you can really, it can be a life-changing program.
Yep.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
We'll work with Mr. Matt's office and get all the documents prepared in a timely manner and bring it back to the board as soon as possible.
Uh-huh. Do you feel like it might be a possibility to get it by the February 1st meeting?
It's on me.
On you, then. You feel that a possibility?
What's your deadline to get on the agenda?
Hey.
All right, I think we get them up
there. Yeah, we're...
If you provide me that documentation, because that would be on our manager's report, so you wouldn't actually come and bring the information. You would provide us the
documents. I didn't know there was a deadline to get on the agenda for counter.
Hey. If you could give it to us,
don't worry about the agenda.
The first of that
I'll put you on the agenda.
Okay, I didn't. Some counties, if you don't hit a deadline, and you don't,
they're different.
I appreciate that. I'm going to get them up February 1st, but even if it's 1st or 15th, I do think one solid month of application review. So no matter what, the plan would be March 1st, application March 31st. At that point, the priority list we currently have in place, we use that, we go in there, we figure out who's 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, and then start the process from there.
Right. That's the main thing, March 1st. As long as y'all rolling, y'all good, and we're not holding you up.
If something changes, I'll be back, or I'll contact you. Hey, I can't see any reason why March 1st we can't take applications. We're not taking applications right now. What we'll do with those is throw them back into the pool. Hey, we're not really trying.
Okay, sounds good.
There ain't no more questions. Adjourned.
No.
We go to the community buildings.
Well, I ain't seen no community building. Oh.
Yeah, I really appreciate
you
having me
now.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. I thought that was going to be brought up in the meeting. I'm sorry.
One prayer.
All right. Mr. Paul, it's all yours.
Well, gentlemen, I have provided the breakdown of the cost of our community centers that we provide for the community. And if you want to take a moment to look at that, we can go through it right quick. We'll just talk about the top three lines is for the previous calendar year for 2023. And let's just look, for example, at the 1st District Community Center. We have a cost of $5,600 a year in insurance, $1,894 in utilities, and then we've spent $4,700 in maintenance just on that facility this year for a total expense of $12,217.57. We've had $1,700 worth of income on that building, which means that we've got $10,517 in the hole that the county has put into that building. So I think it's time that we need to
What's the fee on the first district right now? 50? What's the fee, Trail Riders, 50?
No, 50, I believe.
Dookie Slough is free.
So you generally can look at that and see what expenses we have into those, and that's not even taking into account the personnel, you know, the cost of the labor to actually do any of the maintenance or upkeep that needs to be done there, or the cleaning of the creekers.
So basically,
insurance, utilities, and the cost
to
the maintenance of all.
To break even, we'd have to make at least $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
Basically.
My other question would be is how many rentals do we have at First District? How many rentals do we have at Trail Riders and Bookie Sleep?
They're rented every weekend.
So what about during the week?
Every weekend. So $50 gets you private every Sunday. If there's a holiday, it gets you another
week. So they're none during the week?
Very seldom. Depends on the time of the year, usually holidays. There'll be some during the week, or if there's a meeting or something.
Maybe over the summer. Do any week
graduation parties or things like that.
But the majority
of them are on the weekend. And they pay that $50 for 3 to 4 day weekend. Some of them give
that
on holidays.
Something's not right.
That is it, 52.
If it's 52, then
I think $2,600 a year.
Mm-hmm. They paying the $50 to one fee for all 3 days?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because there's no
there's no place to turn a key back in for one day or the next.
So you pay them, if they get it for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, they only pay $50.
Now, if they rent it Thursday and Friday, they pay $100.
Okay.
50.
There's, but how is that? Why aren't we charging them for Saturday and Sunday then?
Because and I know what Angie's saying is, I want it for Saturday.
Well, no one to.
So I'm renting it for
you guys
Saturday.
Don't get to keep me on Friday, okay. I don't work on Saturday.
This is their income.
I got a question.
How come we can't get all the real estate companies if you got that? They got one of those little drop boxes, a little key box.
Yeah, lock box.
You throw the door knob and you put the key in it.
I have a weekend.
On a regular basis.
Every time.
Yeah, they ain't in there weekend.
Okay, well, let me ask this question. So, do we clean it up after each one of these parties? Do we have somebody that goes, so why can't that person be taught to change the code?
Well, because I think that we use the inmate laborers.
Inmate laborers clean them.
Yeah, okay, you got an inmate labor. But
not all the time. Sometimes they've had to bring the courthouse staff down there.
Yes.
But still, even with the inmate laborers, they've got to have somebody there.
They got a supervisor.
They got a supervisor. Mm-hmm. Why can't that supervisor change the code? You give them the code and tell them to change it.
Well, and we've talked about this a little bit as far as we also seen Angie supplied y'all a list of the chairs and tables and stuff, too. You know, because we're having issues with those all the time, walking off. So, you know, those are another thing that we had talked about is how we're going to try to curb that. And that may be another solution, but of course, anytime we add another task to an employee, it takes them away from whatever their primary is. And
I ain't trying to be, it's so simple if you got to worry about changing codes on it. Buy 3 or 4 lock boxes. Have them numbered. 1, 2, 3, 4. You rent it on Friday, you get your key out of number one box, put it in number two box when you leave.
You break even. 85 a night. Or 85 a day.
85 a day. I mean, then y'all can change them once a week. But I mean,
oh, yeah. We're changing
that's your Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
They're going to do that anyway. When you give it to them in here, they leave one in their pocket and they go straight to Lyle's.
Oh, I know. I think we spent a lot of money changing the locks on the door.
Is there anybody that goes around and checks the AC units or anything left on?
Normally it's Officer Valentine with the female work squad that goes around and does the cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say, for example, it's First District, and I'll give you an example after I give this, but, you know, it may be, you know, Thursday of that week before she actually gets the opportunity to get there, have somebody use it on Saturday.
At least.
Just for an example, myself and
how much would you want to deposit
yesterday to just do the inventory
to be cleaned if it ain't clean.
We get to the First District Community Center, we go inside, it's real hot and stuffy in there. this month ago.
$100, $150.
Thermostat on the wall, it's set on heat of 70 degrees.
Possibly.
Well, we go to the other side where there's another thermostat, so there's two units there. It's set on cool at 70 degrees. So we have one sitting there running trying to keep it cool. We got another one sitting there running trying to keep it warm.
So they're never shut off.
From Saturday. So that has sat there and run both of those units working against each other, I know, for 5 days.
So we need to figure out a way to...
Scotty?
When it's rented and do a pre-inspection and say, hey, we've got 25 tables here and 62 chairs, and then come back at the when they're done with it to verify that they're still there, the air is all, it's left relatively clean, and there's no damage. I don't know what else we can do.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, the remote control for it as far as, like, a lot of these smart homes and stuff, you know, you can control my temperature in my house by my phone or something. But that requires Wi-Fi, right? Scotty, that's what I was saying. It would take...
Increasing the utility, we'd have that possibility here shortly when Central Florida is running fiber. Again, that increases your cost, but it will fix the lock problem and the AC control. But again, it costs money.
And
you can't completely shut off the AC or the air because, or the air at all because...
Well, and you can install a lock box also, like you do in, used to in the high schools when I went to school. I tell you how old I am. We had them wonderful lock box to keep all those little mean children from adjusting the heat and air.
Yeah.
You know, so you could do something along those lines, too.
They pulled those off the wall. We found one that was pulled off the wall.
I mean, these are some legit problems we got, but I think
we went totally left to right. We need to come up with a number on what we're going to rent these buildings.
That's what I've been looking at right here. Is if we do, let's just start at the top.
And we need a first
district building is $85. So let's just look Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 85 times 3 is 255 times 52. That's a year. That's $13,260.
Yep.
Or a total expense is $12,212 or $217. So you can look at 85 there. 75 at Trail Riders, same thing. A day. And then Wabuki Slough there, which is free right now, is we could break even at 65, make a little bit, not a whole bunch. But now the other thing you gotta take into consideration is always the helping the community, the helping hands of the community that we don't charge anything for. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch out at Buki Slough that there is.
That was free.
But that's what I'm saying.
That's
the reason it was left free.
Okay.
Because we went through all this before. But that was the reason it was left free. And if I'm not mistaken, there's one in Gina about the same way.
I don't know that we did work on it.
And the one in 20 is the same way. So there's a few that's left out there that we did not charge anything for, and that was the reason behind it, is for these kind of things. But now what are y'all going to do when they want to go to the Trail Riders? And we said, I'm just using round numbers because that's a break-even number. Commissioner Stevenson, I'm going to hand out food. Or are you going to say it's $85 a day or $85 a night? Or are you going to say, hey, they're helping the community? We need to help
them. Kylie Ruffy discussed that at one of the last meetings on a case-by-case basis. They can come before the board, and if they're doing a charitable or something like that, then we can waiver the fees for that. They have to come to us. And that's my opinion on it. Any kind of charitable or any kind of school event or some organization like that can come to the board, and we can waive it.
You're going to do the same thing that I normally do. I write the check, and we move on.
Well, correctly. If they come call me, that's what I do. I said, all right, I got it.
So instead of $50,
it's just going to cost me some more, or I may make them come to the meeting. If they come to the meeting, I'm sure we'll approve them if it's a charitable event.
The other issue you're going to run into is they're going to say, well, I only need it for Sunday. Why do I have to pay for all 3 days?
Well, we want to handle that differently. We're going to come up with a lockbox or something because you should be charging per day.
By the day.
Period.
But there's the question. I want to have a party on Sunday afternoon, a birthday party for my child. I come up here and I say, hey, I want the Trail Riders Club on, you know, Sunday, whatever day it is. She's going to hand me the key on Friday afternoon. So I go in there on Saturday. I do my decorations. I turn the air on. I leave the air on so it'll be cool when I get there
when,
Sunday afternoon.
When you get
the, I'm only using it for Sunday, but I'm bringing her to back on Monday.
When you
gonna happen no more. From which, like I said, we gonna come up with a system with a lockbox or something.
When you get the key, that's when you start paying.
But I don't need it till Sunday.
If you pay.
It's going to cost you all 3 days, then, is what he's saying.
If you pay. That's the only way you're going to fix the problem, because, look, you do the math here. We made this year, on them just them three sites, $4,100. You minus that from $33,203, that's $29,000 of taxpayers' money. That's someone's salary out there.
I can tell you one way to fix it. The way it was, I can remember when I was a kid, the commissioner had the key to that building. And when they wanted it, they come to his house and got that key. Or he let them and give them the key.
I think that's a wonderful idea.
Oh, no.
I don't mind. I'm right up front of it. My grade was to get the key. They'll say a lockbox system if you put three or four boxes out there. Each box has got a different code. They get done if they specify the day, they open it up and get their key out. When they leave, they stick it in that other box. Those will be open. And then that one do the same thing, so on and so forth.
Okay.
And then y'all can go back and change those codes. But it really don't matter. I mean, most people, the honest person's going to be honest. They're going to duplicate the key. I mean, they come get it for y'all. They, like I said, they leave right here and go live.
Exactly.
I don't even tell how many keys is out there.
If you get it on Sunday.
So that's when
it on a Saturday,
it needs
and then somebody else getting it on a Sunday, they're going to have to clean it before they leave, or it's going to be nasty on that Sunday.
Exactly.
And that's going to go back to
all that's going to have to entail is whoever's using it on Saturday. We're going to need the people's number that's going to be using it on Sunday, and they'll notify them when they're leaving the building.
Well, I think we need a deposit.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Everybody else takes the deposit.
And they can get it back.
It's right. Clean. If it ain't clean, they ain't getting it back.
Yeah.
That's right.
At least $150. At least.
Yeah,
I would say more.
Just thought out a scenario. I rent it for Saturday. Andrew got it for Sunday. I leave there Saturday night at midnight, and I leave it in a mess. She said it shows up 8 o'clock on Sunday morning.
Okay, Stevie's phone's going to ring, and he's going to get somebody up to go clean the building.
We'll
be notified.
we'll get those calls. I guarantee you.
And that's pretty much what it's going to have to go down, probably, is I'm going to tell you, you're renting it behind another individual, so if you get there Sunday and it's dirty, you're going to have to...
You need to take pictures and
exactly.
I think,
send it to us.
And if I'm a Saturday renter, I'm going to take a picture when I leave Saturday to cover me.
Exactly.
So that when Paul comes in there Sunday and he leaves it in a mess, he ain't going to say, well, it was that way when I got here.
Right.
You know, what am I paying for? I got to clean. When I get here and when I leave. I mean, these are things that we hear on a weekly basis.
At $50 for 3 days.
At $50, right.
You got to remember that.
At $50, yes.
Mm-hmm. Whatever number we come up for renting it, I think whatever that number is, there need to be a deposit for the same amount, at least. And then that way, when they come back to get their deposit, and we can show pictures that it wasn't cleaned up, that would nip its own self in the butt.
Well,
if we were responsible for going in there, verifying it's clean before we give out a key, verifying the tables are in there, get a key back on Monday, Tuesday, whatever, somebody got to go back in and verify the same thing again.
Yeah.
Who's going to be that?
Somebody's going to have to do it.
Yeah. Teresa said she would not do it unless she got paid more.
No.
Charlie wants the building. She wants to do the rental of the building.
Did you have fun
with it? She
should. Who?
Charlie. Think about them.
John.
Yeah.
That might be something we might, if she's got time, might be something we need to look at.
That would be on a Monday through Friday. We still have a situation of the working.
And listen, if we...
Somebody
if,
has it for Saturday, somebody else has it for Sunday. There has to be some type of accountability and some type some type of inspection between that
Friday and Sunday. Holiday.
And we need to make the deposit worthy enough, because if you only charge, if it's only $100 and I'm looking at this mass, I'm gonna say, you have my $100.
We're splitting hairs on splitting hairs. When you rent the building, you draw up a document that they sign. Right? They sign that when you get there, the first thing you do is verify what's in the building. So if they get there, they know they're gonna be responsible for stuff, and they ain't but 9 tables, they're supposed to be 10, my phone's gonna ring.
Yeah, I got a call Friday.
I mean, that simplifies that. You put it right on the piece of paper they sign when they rent it. You got to pay a deposit, and it's got to be cleaned up, and everything's got to be there. And this is what's supposed to be in the building. And you can put my number on it or to whoever's over that area. And if it's not when you get there, call this number.
And then,
then I'm going to go call the people who have that and find out what the heck happened to that table. Because they're going to call you and say it was there. Or you follow what I'm saying? That's when I'm going to go to work. Anyway, that will simplify that. But we need to get a number. We're beating around and around. Let's come up with a number.
And that's what's happening when we give them out for 3 days or something is I bury them for them 3 days. And if I'm interested, I'll put them back.
85 for yours, First District. 75 for Trail Riders. 65 for Bookie Sloop. Just do that. And
I say we go with $100 on the
district.
As big as that building is?
$100
per day. No, that's per day.
That's going to be per day. What if they just want for one day?
It's $100.
For 2 days. And that's what you do on any other building. You think about it. You find out
how much you can rent a building for a half a day or something in Gainesville or something like that.
So what do I do?
It hurts your feelings.
Santa calls and she wants to rent the building next weekend, and she wants it for Sunday only, but she has to pick up the key on Friday.
That's not going to happen.
Oh, okay. We're going to do the
we're going to do lockboxes. That ain't going to happen.
But I'm going to have to come in Friday and see you probably and sign the paperwork still. And bring your my deposit and everything else. And I'll get my code, and then Sunday I can go in there and punch my code in and get my key and go in the building.
And make sure you verify what if it's clean or not. And
all the things accounted for.
And that's it. I mean,
and it ain't going to take them 2 minutes to walk around and count the sheriff's tables.
Well, if they don't, it's on them.
And have proof of it. Everybody's got a cell phone now.
We'll see what that one is. So just
and take a picture of it. CYA.
Yeah, I mean,
anyway, I think $100 on the First District is big. That building is twice as big as any other building we rent now.
With a $100 deposit.
$100
deposit.
$200. They get another back, they clean it, and don't make none of the tables and chairs.
How much, Ms.
That's crazy. But, yeah, I mean, that's fair. I mean, that's a reasonable amount.
To make them clean it up.
To get that deposit back.
How much? What? $300 deposit.
Well, and
sufficient. You got a lot of people out there that's gonna be struggling just to pay the $100 to rent the building.
This is a whole other subject in the building. But I don't know if you've been in there and seen the amount of staples that are in the ceilings and the banisters and everything that's in there.
And everything,
yeah.
Well, there's been no accountability for years.
The First District, yours, what do you want to do, though?
I want to do $100 with $100 deposit.
Okay.
There you go.
$100 per day, regardless.
Period.
Okay. Even
over
the weekend.
No, we can't vote on this right now.
I know we can't vote on it, but I mean, that's what...
But we're workshopping it. So.
Yeah, right. We're just idealing it right now.
It's mine. I'll say $100 deposits and $85
a day.
Bookie Slew's mine, 65 a day. Damn, I hate to say $100 deposit.
One table will be $100 for a plate.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, they're so it's so small. 75 deposit.
What about the Old Town School?
Even at 75. That's a whole nother animal. We have to wait on Daniel on that one.
So
because we ain't nowhere near renting it out yet.
No.
Stephen, that said, actually 75, we're actually 11.4 is your expenses, and that puts us at about $600 profit there. A little over 12,000 on that at 75, so 85 should put us around 13. So it should put us in pretty good shape. And the reason I went a little bit higher is maybe we might have an organization that wants to help out and offset that cost there a little bit. Because we do have a lot of organizations, Christian organizations and school functions that FFA, I know some of them, tried to offset that. And yours was the same way, Jody. Yours was 85 and you went to 100. So that offset a little bit of that also.
I know we're not in the business of making money, but that being said, that doesn't cover any extraordinary expense. You get one unit go down, which is going to happen.
It does actually cover.
We got some repairs in these dumpers.
Yes. But right now we're in the hole, 10.5 on one, 9,000 on another, and a 95 on another one. So actually, yes, it does.
And then you're going to have extra duties that you're adding to some county employee somewhere. It's going
to
cost us. I'm not trying to naysay y'all. I'm just trying to make
if we can collect what we got and do away with this $30,000 in the hole and just break even, it ain't going to cost us $30,000 that we're losing right now to put somebody.
Oh, I agree. It needs to go up.
We're still going to be a lot better off than where we're at. We've got to start somewhere. I think this is a good starting point. Yeah.
So, since we are in a workshop and we cannot take any official action, we've got a good start on these three buildings. Commissioner Hatch said that he would like to wait until Commissioner Wood is here to talk about the old town, but we want to wait and have the discussion on the old town building. Next meeting, and then the 15th, can we bring a recommendation on these numbers, or do we want to rehash it at a different time?
I'm done hashing.
Well, we still have the downtown community.
I'm talking about within three. That's going to be completely different. We need
some. That's the WC community.
I mean, Daniel's, Daniel's suggestion on that.
Yeah.
It might be the draft. A recommendation based off of this discussion tonight. We haven't taken any action. I'll just come back with a recommendation based off of this workshop.
That's what I'd like to do. At least we got the ball rolling there.
And I think
before we actually take possession of that,
we're supposed to meet next board meeting. It should be on the.
So it could be another month before we actually can say, hey, we can rent this building out.
Middle of next month, we should get it signed over to the county. Now, we've got the numbers that we can do a very similar proposal for numbers.
But you have insurance and all that, right?
Utility cost. You almost
that number? Yeah, probably $1,200.
$13,000.
How much?
$27,000 for last year just on utility.
That's a year, so break that down.
A year. Just utility.
That's just that's just
about $2,800 a month, man.
$27,000 for
what? But who all was using that building?
For a year. It sits vacant pretty much. It stays vacant a lot. And
did they have to replace the units or something?
You have to keep some air going.
Climate control to keep, the mold and the mildew and all that stuff down. And there, when you walk into that building, there is a lot more to that building than just what you see.
Well, I've been in there a couple times that it was. It took a while for it to get cooled off in there because it was hot, so it wasn't running all the time.
Paul, ain't that one of the ones, too, that's controlled from central office or something?
Welder in this thing, too. Yeah.
How often do you rent the one out in Gina?
I don't do anything with
Gina. Is that the library?
There's got to be something else going on in the utilities. That number.
Yeah. Leon, why don't you find out the square footage on that building for us, please?
Yeah, that don't even sound right.
Yeah, that don't sound nothing right.
Maybe that may be the utilities for the whole complex, is there?
No, it broke down. We got a breakdown at the last meeting.
How long will it take you to walk through there and get us that? We're in the next board meeting. Can we discuss?
Take time.
Okay, let's do that. And then Daniel will be back too, and we can all.
Okay.
I'll bring back a recommendation for fees and deposits.
And then we need to get it, when we get it finalized, get it lettered.
Probably. I got one more question I want Leon or somebody to look into. On utilities, the First District building is one of the largest buildings we have right now. The heating and cooling, or the utilities there is 1,800. The Trail Riders Club, which is not that big of a building, is almost 4,000. So we got something going on there also, on utility-wise, that ain't quite something efficient or something needs to be done differently.
Did y'all see an increase, I mean, at my house whenever it's hot outside? Did y'all go back month to month and do these accurately, or did you just do a month and times it? How did that happen?
No, I have them straight out of units what we paid.
For month to month to month?
Yeah.
So if we go back, you can say January it was $2, February it was $6.
Yeah. I have all that background.
So your numbers is really accurate. You feel real good.
Yeah, I took it straight from there.
Well, we might need to look at your unit up there.
Yeah,
something's not.
If we got two units running that one, and the way he's talking, they're running continuously.
Yeah.
Looks like it averages about 250 during the real hot, or 250, 300 in the real hot months, and then 150, low as 78.
Well, that's cheaper than my house.
During spring.
That was a shock.
Okay, no.
What was the other one? That's
exactly what it is. 1 Duke, 1 Central. Much higher.
Trail Riders in Duke. Trust me, their office and house. 404. Yeah. 483.
We need to bury a wire.
We got any more questions this workshop?
I don't.
All right. Well, then, let's adjourn the workshop. It's almost time to start the meeting, but let's take a little recess. We've